I first met Lyndon and Elaine Kirsch when I was a senior in college. Melissa and I would drive from where we lived in College Station to Waller, Texas, where they were members. And I would preach that morning, and we'd stay the afternoon, and I'd preach that night, and then we'd drive back. Did that for a year. And we always stayed with some of my cousins who were members there. And Lawrence and Gene Koenig were the older members who would entertain us in their home, and they would fix lunch for us. And Brother Lawrence, the patriarch, always sat at the head of the table, and Sister Jean would fix all the kind of foods I've enjoyed in your company this week. And every Sunday afternoon, Brother Lawrence would say the same thing when we finished eating. He'd put his hands on his full stomach and lean back in his chair and say, "I wish we were just starting." Well, I wish we were just starting our time together this week. My first trip to Burnet has been a most encouraging one, and I thank you for all the ways in which you've served me while I've been in your midst this week. It's been a pleasure to be with my co-laborer in the gospel and to visit with Daryl and to see the good work he's doing among the people of God and to see your love for him and his love for you and appreciate the shepherds you have here who are trying to lead you to the chief shepherd. And I hope you're thankful for them and their families as they labor among you. Brother Lawrence died first, and then Sister Jean followed him not long after. And I remember thinking at their funerals that when we've been in heaven for 10,000 years, we'll just be getting started. And I look forward to that great reunion, and people that I didn't even know when I got here on Sunday. And I can't imagine what heaven would be like without you now. Who will follow Jesus? We've been studying. And I want us to end in a passage where we began in Luke chapter 6. And invite your attention to that opening. Luke chapter 6. And we'll read beginning at verse 12. "And it was at this time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples to them, and chose 12 of them, whom he also named as apostles: Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, and James and John, and Philip and Bartholomew, and Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon who was called the Zealot, Judas the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor." I hope a list like that means more to you tonight than it did when we read it on the Lord's Day. I hope you see it as more than just a list of names. I hope you see each person represented there and the kind of life not only that they lived individually, but the work they did as the 12 who left everything and followed Jesus. Remember, we made the observation that each list of the apostles is different in the order, with two exceptions. There's one who's always listed first, and that's Peter. And there's one who's always listed last, and that's Judas. And it's always accompanied by the phrase which tells why he's listed last, the one who betrayed him. Think of that. Even the song that we teach our children so that they'll learn the names of the 12 apostles ends that way. 12 apostles Judas made, Jesus was by him betrayed. And I think that's lost its shock value to us. But I want you to imagine what that would have meant to the first century reader, that one of Jesus' hand-picked, chosen 12 betrayed him. The one Jesus assigned to be an ambassador for him, who saw all the miracles that he did and heard every word that he preached, and he betrayed his master. And the way Luke says it, notice, he became a traitor. That's similar to in Genesis chapter 2, where it says, the man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. And in Genesis 2:24, the two shall become one flesh. Does that happen overnight? Or is that a process where you grow together and the two become one? Well, so it was that Judas became a traitor. Some say, well, it was prophesied that would happen, and so the devil just took over him and he didn't have any choice about being a traitor. Well, does that mean he had no free will? He was not a free moral agent who could decide to follow Jesus and also decide to become a traitor? The warning is, if it could happen to Judas, it can happen to us. If someone so close in proximity to the Lord could fall away, what does that say about those of us 2,000 years removed? Who will follow Jesus? Watchful for his cause. I submit to you that Judas became a traitor because he was not watchful. And if it can happen to Judas, it can happen to us. Number one, it can happen to someone who's a follower of Jesus. And remember, Judas was. Just like Peter, Andrew, James, and John, he left everything to follow Jesus. Just like Bartholomew and Matthew and Simon the Zealot, he left everything behind. Now, the thing that was different about Judas is that he was the only one from Judea. The others were Galileans. But Judas Iscariot literally means man of Kerioth. Kerioth was one of the cities appointed to the tribe of Judah when Joshua divided the land in Joshua 15 and verse 14. So Judas was from this land of Judea. Think about how he would have had before him all the opportunities of being from that district. He could have been a rising star among Judaism. He would have been in closer proximity to Jerusalem. But he left all that behind and rose and followed Jesus. In Luke chapter 9, notice where Judas, along with the other 12, were given these special powers. Luke 9 and verse 1, he called the 12 together and gave them power and authority over all the demons and to heal diseases. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to perform healing. Judas was one of those. It doesn't say he gave the 11, not Judas. No, he too had authority and power to heal. And if you're going to say that he was working and doing the devil's bidding here at the beginning, well, here he's casting demons out. And he's proclaiming the kingdom of God. He was a follower of Jesus. And he became a traitor. He was such a follower that even Peter said in Acts chapter 1 and verse 17, he was counted among us. You know, the other disciples were never suspicious of Judas. They never saw in him an act of treachery. You remember at the Last Supper, when Jesus told the apostles, now he had said before that he would be betrayed, but this was the first time he said, one of you will betray me. It's going to come from somebody at this table. And do you remember what each of the disciples said first? Surely not I, Lord. Please, Lord, say it's not me. They didn't say, oh, it's Judas, isn't it? Oh, I've been suspicious about him. I've been wondering about Judas. They didn't do that because he was a follower of Jesus. And even when they were giving out responsibilities among the 12, in John 12 and verse 6, in John 13 and verse 29, Judas was the treasurer. He held the money box. They trusted Judas. It can happen to a follower of Jesus. I want you to know tonight that just because you're plugged in to the work here and you're active in the assembly and you're leading God's people in the worship and you're teaching others the Bible, that does not make you immune to the devil's devices. If it can happen to Judas, we need to be watchful. Just because we're following does not mean that'll never happen to me. Even if you're attentive to your brothers and sisters and serving, it can happen to us. Even those who follow the Lord closely. Yes, who will follow Jesus? But who will follow him watchful for his cause? Number two, it can happen to those who are surrounded by good influences. Even those who are in the best of circumstances can become a traitor. You know, we use that excuse for people all the time, don't we? Somebody's in prison. Oh, well, look at the family life they had. I mean, they didn't have a chance. Look at the home they came from. Or look at that school that they went to and all the drugs that are there. They just couldn't help it. Well, here was a man who was surrounded by the Son of God. And he became a traitor. Think of the seat that Judas had for 3.5 years as an apostle of Jesus Christ. He walked with the Lord and saw, he was an eyewitness to those miracles. When our daughter Morgan was young, and I was reading to her from, do you remember those Mrs. Lee's Bible story books? And the books helped to put those Bible stories into words that a little girl could understand. And so I was reading her one from, she had a book called The Life of Christ. And it was the story of Jesus healing the son of the widow of Nain. That's the one where they're coming out of the city carrying the body to be buried. And Jesus and the disciples come up to the funeral procession. And according to Mrs. Lee's Bible story, he went over and said to the boy who was dead, "I say to you, get up." And I read it just like that. And Morgan's eyes got real big and she said, "Let's see if he gets up." Don't you know the disciples thought the same thing? And Judas got to see that. He was on the boat being rocked by the winds and waves, and he saw Jesus say, "Peace, be still." And it did. He was there. He was seated at Jesus' feet when he preached the Sermon on the Mount. And he told the parable of the sower. Judas was surrounded by the best influences. And he became a traitor. You ever heard the phrase, "Never meet your heroes"? That's a warning of somebody you idolize, maybe in the sports world or some musician. And as chance happens, you get to meet them. And the cameras are off, and there's no press there, and you come away disappointed, because they're never in person what they appear to be on the stage or on the field or in your imagination. Judas was never disappointed by his Lord. The way he was with a crowd of 10,000 was the same way he was one-on-one. He was there. And it can happen. When we surround ourselves with the best people, sometimes young people leave home and they leave the Lord. And parents ask, what'd we do wrong? And elders wonder, what more could we have done? And preachers think, what should I have said or what should I not have said? You can be in the best environment, come from the best parents, be a member of the best church, and you can still choose to give up Jesus. Because it happened to Judas. Who will follow Jesus, watchful for his cause? Number three, it can happen to those who don't guard their heart. Judas gave up Jesus because he didn't guard his heart. Look in Luke's Gospel, chapter 22. And read with me starting at verse 1. Now the feast of unleavened bread, which is called the Passover, was approaching. And the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how they might put him to death, for they were afraid of the people. And Satan entered into Judas, who was called Iscariot, belonging to the number of the 12. And he went away and discussed with the chief priests and officers how he might betray him to them. And they were glad and agreed to give him money. And he consented and began seeking a good opportunity to betray him apart from the multitude. I want you to notice first that it was Judas who initiated the deal. It was not the rulers of the Jews who backed him into a corner somewhere and said, "You're going to give us Jesus or we're going to go after your family. You're going to turn him into us or we're going to hurt you." No, Judas was the one who initiated it. In fact, in Matthew's account, he asked the question, "How much will you give me to turn Jesus over to you?" The text says they were afraid of the multitude. They didn't want to do it in front of the crowd because of how they revered Jesus. So they wanted some opportune time where he would be away from the multitude. And Judas was the one who knew he likes to go to the Garden of Gethsemane at night. That'll be a good time. There won't be many people there. And did you notice Satan had entered his heart? He'd let the devil get too close. Solomon said in Proverbs 4 and verse 23, "Guard your heart above all else. Be diligent to keep your heart." Why? Because from it flow the issues of life. The things of life come from the heart. What you put in is what comes out of your mouth. It's what your hands and your feet do. And so you guard your heart. But Judas let Satan in. That doesn't mean that Satan had somehow overpowered Judas. It's the same thing as when Jesus said to Peter, when Peter said, "God forbid, Lord, you shall not die. This should never happen to you." And remember, Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." Well, was Peter literally Satan? No, he was carrying out the purposes of the devil. He was trying to keep Jesus from the cross. Well, now Judas is carrying out the wishes of the devil because he didn't guard his heart. And he gave up Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. You go back to your Old Testament, you'll find in Exodus 21 and verse 32 that was the price, according to the law of Moses, that you would give someone if your ox had somehow gored their slave. And so Jesus was betrayed for the same price as a gored slave. You say, "How cheap." Is it any cheaper than when we give up Jesus for pornography? When we give up Jesus to tell a lie? We give up Jesus for anger. We give up Jesus for discouragement or pride. It can happen to Judas. It can happen to us when we don't guard our heart. In that garden, Jesus told his disciples, keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. Mark 14 and verse 38. Keep watching and praying. And he'd go off and pray, and he'd come back, and what were they doing? They were asleep. And so when the soldiers came, Jesus was ready. He'd been watching and praying. But because they'd been doing neither one, they weren't prepared. Guard your heart. Don't let the devil get too close, because from your heart flow the things of life. And you will cease being watchful. Who will follow Jesus, watchful for his cause? And then finally, if it can happen to Judas, number four, it can happen to those who give up on the grace of God. See, Judas gave up Jesus, and then he gave up altogether. Look in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27. And look at verse 1 beginning. Now, when morning had come, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death, and they bound him and led him away and delivered him up to Pilate, the governor. Now, when Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that he had been condemned, he felt remorse. Now, just stop there and think about that phrase. When he saw that he had been condemned. Well, what was Judas expecting to happen? And why at that moment, all of a sudden, did remorse come over him? Could it be that Judas thought, well, I've seen Jesus escape his enemies before. He's gotten out of trouble when they've wanted to kill him. So maybe I'd turn him over, get the money, I'll keep it, and then he'll escape like he's done before. Maybe he thought that. Or maybe he thought, I know he's innocent. He's not done the things they're charging him for, and so he'll be tried and let free, and I'll still keep the money. Maybe he thought that. Or perhaps Judas was among those Jewish people waiting for a physical kingdom, that Jesus came to establish an army with swords and spears that would overthrow Rome and drive them out of the promised land, and that somehow by bringing this trial on, it would trigger the coming of the kingdom. And now when Pilate said, put him to death, he realizes that's not the kind of king Jesus came to be. For whatever reason, he felt remorse. And verse 3 continues, he returned 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned by betraying innocent blood. But they said, what is that to us? See to that yourself. They've already got what they wanted. Jesus was going to be executed. And so verse 5, he threw the pieces of silver into the sanctuary and departed. And he went away and hanged himself. Gave up Jesus. And And then he just gave up everything. You ever wondered how differently things would have played out if Judas, in his grief, would have just waited 3 days? Just 3 days. And now Jesus is alive again. He's conquered death. He's risen. And now he can redeem me from my sin. He can cause me to live again. Just 3 days. Peter, we read at the end of verse of chapter 26, in his grief, he went out and wept bitterly. He waited on the Lord. He still found hope that he could be resurrected. But Judas went away and hanged himself. It can happen to those who give up on the grace of God, who say things like, well, you don't know what I've done. You don't know what's in my past. God could never wash that away. He could never forgive me. Jesus knows. And he died and rose again, so that you could be delivered and you could be saved and you could live again. If it can happen to Judas, it can happen to us. I know that the names of the 12 apostles are again listed at the end of the book of Revelation on those foundation stones of the heavenly city. And I certainly don't mean to imply that when we follow Jesus in their likeness, that somehow our names are going to be remembered like theirs are. But we know they will be written in another place, and that's the Lamb's Book of Life. Several have asked me this week, is Bubba your real name? I was named after my father, Gerald Edward Garner. I always hated the first day of school because the teacher would call the roll and she'd say, now if you go by a different name, you let me know and I'll write it in the roll book. And she'd get to Gerald Garner, and I'd have to raise my hand and say, Bubba, and everybody would laugh. But you know, there's coming a day when the roll's going to be called. And I don't care if God says, well done, Gerald. Or well done, Bubba. I just want him to know my name. Because do you know what the alternative is? Depart. I never knew you. One day he'll call us one by one. well done. Let's be certain we're ready. And follow Jesus wherever he leads us, all the way to the throne of God. Who will follow Jesus tonight? Come confess your faith, be baptized, come back to him. Let us help and encourage and pray with you and for you right now while we stand up and while we sing.